Welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for this series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, February 28th, 2008, the 69th day of winter. We are 9 days over three quarters through this wonderfully mild winter, although today is brisk. It is cold. It is a true winter's day, but it's the end of February, for goodness sakes, 2 days to March. We have gained 2 minutes of daylight since yesterday, 35 minutes since last we met 2 weeks ago. Days are lengthening apace. The sun rose at 6:32 this morning. It will set at 5:44 this evening. We will have 11 hours and 12 minutes of daylight today. The moon rose at 12:48 this morning. It set about 21 minutes ago at 9:47. Spring arrives 3 weeks from today on March 20th as the vernal equinox revisits the Earth as it has perennially year in and year out since time began. We are about 1 day off of last quarter. I believe that's tomorrow. Our high tides, I'm sorry, I had a little trouble locating that. Next high tide in New Rochelle will be at 4:04 p.m. in Yonkers at 2:26 p.m. and in Dobbs Ferry at 2:54 p.m. this afternoon. Those are the high tides. Pretty soon we will be getting into boating weather, but even if you don't boat, it is nice to know that the tides rise and fall twice a day as they have since time began. Now, our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives in Iraq, may they live on in all of our hearts. Specialist Kevin S. Moll, age 22, from the Army, from Pittsford, New York. He died of an IED attack, which is an improvised explosive device. Sorry, I don't have the date, but that was recently, within the last week. Private First Class Michael E. Phillips, 19, of Ardmore, Oklahoma. He was with the Army's 101st Airborne Division. He died in Baghdad, also of an IED attack, on February 24th. Was that 4 days ago? Specialist Keisha M. Morgan, 25, a lady, a soldier, but a female soldier, Washington, D.C. native, from the Army. She actually died of an illness, not of hostile fire, but she died far from home in Baghdad on the 22nd of February. And Lance Corporal Drew W. Weaver, age 20, of St. Charles, Missouri. He was with the Marines. He died on the 21st of February of hostile fire in Anbar Province, Iraq. Now, milestones are meaningless, and each life is a treasure and a tragic loss. But for those for whom numbers connect, as of February 26th, 2 days ago, 3,973 American servicemen and women have died in the Middle East during this current war, and that is just 27 short of 4,000. Again, milestone doesn't matter. The 4,000th life will be the same as the first or the 256th. Each life is precious. May these American servicemen and women live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the very near future, because there are no more deaths to report. Okay, now it's time for our culture corner. My reviews of plays, ballets, opera, museums, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions and you have the right to differ from them, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Well, we went to see The Phantom of the Opera. It's 20 years old. On January 26th was its 20th anniversary. It is the first Broadway show ever to do so. It is the most successful and longest running Broadway musical of all time. So we checked it out to see how it holds up after all these years. I don't think I'm giving anything away by telling you the story as if you didn't know it. It is a version of the classic fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, which has been played as King Kong and in other venues as well. The conflict: can a beautiful woman love a man of powerful energy, yet sensitive inside, who is horrible to look at? Howard McGillin is a worthy lead as the Phantom, a clandestine character who must wear a mask over half his face to cover its terrible deformity. He dwells in the darkness and the shadows of the opera house, where he adopts young Christine as a student and propels her to stardom. Does he love her, or is he just interested in her in a mentor-protege relationship? Well, of course he loves her. But he sabotages his chances, as is often the way with people of low esteem, and never gives the love a chance. I have seen this in the parlor and the barroom. A man has no chance with the girl whom he thinks he loves, yet he intimidates any rival who dares to approach her. If he must be lonely, then so must she. Well, Christine does meet a man, that is, re-meet someone she once knew, and they develop, for better or worse, a romance. What happens next? If you don't know it, go see this worthwhile production. Christine was played by Elizabeth Loyacano at this performance, as she does every Monday and Thursday. Jennifer Hope Wills plays it the rest of the time. Ms. Loyacano is a good singer. She acts and moves well. No distractions here. Where I did have some problem was with the sound. There was a septet, which I presume we were supposed to understand the words of, and I don't know if it is just that there were too many parts to discern or if the sound system was overloaded, but I didn't get the words. Nonetheless, even though I did not hear every word, I did enjoy the production. The sets and costumes were grand. The staging was fabulous. True to its name, the play is more opera than Broadway musical. Patricia Phillips and Tim Martin Gleason have fine operatic voices, and they did not disappoint. Certainly worth a second or third look if you are an aficionado. If you have never seen Phantom, now is a good time. Tickets are available, and no doubt there are discounts available as well. Now, just a word about politics before I introduce my guest. Politics is on most minds these days. The terrible presidency of this man whose name I am loath to mention still has 11 months to run. And while he is the lamest duck in memory, there is still time for a fanatic who takes his orders from God to do damage. It is my belief that the Republican Party should be taught a lesson and that they should lose big in November. And by the way, if it was the Democrats who had foisted this travesty on the American public, I would say that they should be the ones to be punished. But it's the Republicans. They should lose seats in Congress, and of course they should lose the presidency. Not that John McCain is a bad guy. Of all the candidates, he is the one I would most like to know personally. Hillary is a bit too tight, and Obama is too smug for my taste. But policy-wise, court appointment-wise, and everything else-wise, I will vote for the Democrat. Too bad Mr. McCain is pro the Iraq war and pro the Bush tax cuts. I think he is off base on the issues, even if I like him as a man. It will be hard for some people to vote for either a woman or a man of color, but I will do just that this November, and I urge you to as well. Well, my guest today is Wiley Miller, if the name doesn't ring a bell right away. He is a cartoonist who draws non sequitur, which we have in our journal news in the Gannett paper here in Westchester County. Mr. Miller is the first person ever to win the National Cartoonists Society Divisional Awards in both comic strip and comic panel categories. And he won the comic strip award less than a year after he began writing non sequitur, which is also a first. Joining us from the beautiful state of Maine, welcome Wiley Miller.
Thank you, Bob.
Good morning. How are you today?
Very good.
Thanks for coming on a little early. We had a little change in schedule, and I'm happy to have the extra time with you.
Oh, my pleasure.
What's it like up there in Maine? It's kind of cold down here in New York.
I'm guessing it's pretty much the same here as it is down there right now. It's actually pretty mild, not too cold. Got some snow last night, but not bad.
Mild for you is probably cold for us.
No, actually, you know, Maine isn't nearly as cold as people think it is. Maybe more inland and upstate, but I'm on the southern coast, so it's milder here.
What town are you in?
Kennebunkport.
Kennebunkport. Isn't that where the...
That's where the bushes are,
yeah. The bushes are, yeah.
Yes, and they have their guard dogs to make sure I don't get close.
So I gather you know where their estate is. Yes.
Everybody does.
Kennebunkport can't be all that big, can it?
No, it's a very small place.
Well, you know, recently, and the reason I've read your strip a lot in the last few years since it's been in our paper. I've just read it, and I do enjoy it. But you had a couple of controversial strips, but one that has been played round and around the world, apparently. I received it after we had already booked you, and we knew you were going to be on, and just some friend out of the blue who didn't even know that sent me your Holocaust strip, and apparently it has been going round and round the world, and why don't you just tell us a little bit about that?
It was a Sunday strip, and it was multi-panel, a lot of text on there, so it's kind of hard to do on radio, but the gist of the strip was... the aftermath of the Holocaust and the reason for keeping the tattoo on an arm of a survivor is, you know, never forget. And what never forget means is to not just forget what happened there, but to prevent it from happening again, that it can happen anywhere at any time. I'm sure that the people of Germany never believed that such a thing could happen in their country. Well, it can happen anywhere. I originally did this strip about a year before the invasion of Iraq, seeing what was coming and what was happening in our own country. Since I did that cartoon, we've lost habeas corpus. We now engage willingly in torture and sanctify it. We've destroyed the Fourth Amendment with spying on citizens, as well as invading a country that did nothing to us. Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Sounds like America to me.
Yeah, so it sounds like another country back in the 30s and early 40s, doesn't it?
Yes.
So when it first ran, it got some attention. A lot of people, really enjoyed it, and mostly all favorable. But I ran it again a couple of years ago, 4 years later, during a vacation time, and I thought, well, it's time to run this cartoon again. And when it re-ran, the response to it was just overwhelming. People went nuts over it, in a good way, and people started sending it around the internet, and it just became this phenomenon that it's, for the last 2 years now, it's been circulating throughout the internet, and I think a conservative estimate is more than a billion people have seen it.
Well, the list that I got it from, the people who sent it to me, I'm on the same list with some people in Japan, so mm-hmm. It's at least over there, and presumably
I've been getting mail from all around the world.
It's everywhere
regarding this.
But now you have, in addition to having very astute and pungent political things, you just write some funny stuff, philosophy about life. You have your two characters, Danae and Kate, your two girls. These are the ones I like best. The single panel ones sometimes grab me, but it's when you get into Danae and Kate that I really connect with you. And of course, these two young girls here, I don't know how old they are here, but in real life, they are your daughters, and they're, 33 and 25?
Yeah, they're patterned after our daughters.
And, I love it. I love it.
Who are now grown. So the girls that I have in the strip are, around, 8, 9 years old.
Yeah, they seem about the same age. Danae seems maybe a year or two older, but that's about it.
Yeah, she's right. Yeah, she's the older sister.
And gets
into trouble.
And yet, Danae gets into terrible trouble. Kate is the good little girl.
She's a good little girl, quiet and more book smart.
Yeah.
And all that.
Almost an angel. And when she comes to speak to Daddy, which I guess is you, she is always respectful and mature. And Danae has always got an axe to grind with you and judging you. Now, the fellow that you draw in the strip, who is the father of this... of these girls, looks nothing like you. I have a photograph of you here on my desk.
No.
And why did you?
It's not really supposed to be me, but in another sense, all characters
are you. Yeah.
Are, yes. In the essence, yeah. It just lends a different voice to something you want to say. So every character plays a role. In any comic strip.
And in any literature at all, if you write a novel, each of the characters comes out of you is the only place it can come from.
Right. Yeah.
So, but this is fictionalized. For instance, I presume you don't have or maybe your wife's name is Victoria. Why should I presume it isn't?
Introducing the character of Victoria mm-hmm. Came from families, my wife's family, being concerned that they read too much into the comic strips, thinking that it's reflecting. So when I had Joe, who's a single father,
right.
interest. Well, it was more of an interest from another woman, Brenda, who is a younger female character.
And as I recall, Danae prefers that you marry
right.
her for some reason.
And so anyway, that my wife would be hearing from an old aunt or something of concerned that something was wrong with our marriage. So my wife said, how about having Joe get interested in a woman called named Victoria, so they'll stop bothering me. So I said, all right, let's keep peace in the family. So
well, you could really tease people with that. You could write anything else. How does somebody get to be a character in your strip? I'd love to see myself in there. What do I have to do for that? Do I have to enter a contest or something? Or
The minimum rate is $100,000 in cash.
Uh-huh. And that
in small bills.
And that goes right to you. And now that reflects one of your other strips where, let me see if I can find it. You start naming your kids Porsche and Rolex, as I recall. Do I have that right? Yeah, here it is. You say, Danae is looking at a blog and she says, an editor in New York wonders if cartoonists are getting payola for mentioning brand names in their comics. And you say, could it be that the purists are selling out now? And then Joe says, oh, I'm sure they don't do that. And even if they are, those lovable lungs deserve it. So don't worry about it, Portia. And Danae says, Daddy, my name is Danae. She says, not anymore. Now, where's your sister Courvoisier and her dog Rolex?
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the Portia people to get in touch with me about that. But nothing so far.
So that's what I got to do, right? All right, well, maybe. I'm not giving you a Porsche just to see my name in the comments.
Yeah.
But you definitely make a good point. And now this program is, of course, environmentally sound. And we talk about the environment. We talk about wildlife and the natural world. And in one of your strips...
Well, they happen to know that I have two hybrids of cars that we drive.
Excellent. I'm happy to hear that. And you see, a person of means who can probably afford that Porsche would prefer to be environmentally sound, and I appreciate that. In one of your strips, you have Petey, the dog, Kate's dog, I guess, and mm-hmm. she asks what he's thinking or what he wants to do, and he's thinking, I want to catch and eviscerate a moose. A moose, of course, you live in Maine, so that's more realistic than
right.
down here in Westchester County, New York. And then Katie says, but of course, Katie doesn't hear the dog. That's just what the dog is thinking. So Katie says to the dog, would you like to play ball? And he says, that'll do.
Yeah.
He thinks that'll do. And what that says to me, since as I just said, we do talk about animals a lot, that brings to mind the wolf situation out in the, well, all over, but in particular Idaho, Montana, around Yellowstone Park, where the wolves are under attack by states and the Bush administration has just delisted them as an endangered species. So what this says to me is this dog... And you have, what, 5 Jack Russell Terriers?
Yes, I do.
Okay, this dog is a wolf. And he thinks like a wolf, but yes, he has been domesticated, and not just domesticated, but bred most of the wild out of him, but you can't really breed all of the wild out of him, so he still really wants to run and hunt. And to me, that's it shows that you have the sensitivity to the natural world to understand just what they are. So let me ask you something. If dogs come from wolves, why are people so fond of their pet dogs and they bury them in cemeteries and they cry when they die and they're so protective and they spend thousands of dollars at a vet, and yet they go out and they shoot wolves, which are really the noblest of dogs?
Well, you also have jackasses who go for dog fighting. Yeah, so with human beings are... very inconsistent. And I'll just never understand how anybody could even think of hurting a dog or killing a wolf. I mean, a wolf is just such a magnificent creature. And how anybody would justify killing them is beyond me.
Well, the governor of Idaho recently said that as soon as the delisting occurs and you can go out and shoot dogs, he says, I want to get the first permit to go out and shoot me a wolf.
Yeah.
And that's the governor of Idaho. So, I mean,
yeah. Well,
I don't get the hunting mentality anyway, but...
No, I've never understood that. I mean, it's one thing if you are living off the land and need to hunt for survival, but 99.9% of us who don't have things called grocery stores. There is no need to hunt. The only need for hunt is bloodlust.
Yeah.
And anybody who denies that is fooling themselves.
So I guess living in Maine, you truly appreciate the moose.
Oh,
that's just right. Okay, Wiley, we're gonna take a little break, and you'll hang on, and we'll bring you back in shortly after. Okay.
Okay.
Hang on. Thanks very much. You are listening to Environmentally Sound on AM 1460 here in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening in Ardmore or Enid, Oklahoma, St. Charles, Missouri, or Louisiana, Bangor or Portland, Maine, or Portland, Oregon, or on Charming Springs Farm in Womelsdorf, Pennsylvania, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. I am Bob Lebensold, your host for this program. My guest today is Wiley Miller, the cartoonist who draws non sequitur. Deb, do I have a chance to read some ad copy? Oh, we're a little tight. Okay, we will come back in just a moment.
Is the flagship station of Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX and worldwide at WVOX.com. Now, the latest update from Fox News Radio.
Fox News Radio, I'm Ron Flatter. The economy crawling along in first gear, and the president knows it.
I don't think we're headed to recession, but no question we're in a slowdown.
President Bush telling a news conference at this hour he expects the economic stimulus checks going out in May to help jumpstart the economy. He also says a proposed bill to help the housing slump may have the opposite effect.
The Senate bill would actually prolong the time it takes for the housing market to adjust and recover, and it would lead to higher interest rates.
The president also called on the House to pass an updated version of the Domestic Wiretapping Act.
The issue is a dispute over whether telecommunications companies should be subjected to class action lawsuits because they are believed to have helped defend America after the attacks of 9/11. Allowing these lawsuits to proceed would be unfair.
President Bush says the country is in more danger now that the temporary surveillance law has expired. Fox News, we report, you decide.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of the New Rochelle Marina, David's Island, the Huguenot Yacht Club, and the Soundshore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
It started some years ago on Long Island when two gifted interior designers who just happened to be sisters, Mary Middlemiss and Nancy Rutigliano, combined their resources and remarkable talents to create twice as nice interiors. The sisters and their unique design service have today become famous for their tasteful work among substantial and discerning individuals and clients in Westchester, Manhattan, the Hamptons, the North Shore, who now rely on them to redo primary residences, country homes, and in-town apartments. As designers, Mary and Nancy quite understand that decorating a home, an office, or apartment can be a pretty frustrating and draining process. Twice as nice interiors makes it easy. And unlike many so-called decorators, the sisters, each possessed of a keen eye and exquisite taste, ensure that the rooms you have in mind reflect your personality and accommodate your family's lifestyle. They specialize in sensible floor plans, lighting, fabric, wallpaper, paint and color coordination, plus bathroom and kitchen layouts and marble, granite, and tile selection, all at reasonable decorator prices. It's called Twice as Nice Interiors, created by those two talented and designing sisters from Long Island. Call Mary or Nancy at 631-581-9291, 631-581-9291, or visit twiceasniceinteriors.com.
93.5 WVIP, the station for the VIPs, the very important people of the new New York, every day and every night, celebrating the wonderful multicultural mosaic in the history and heritage of all New Yorkers. On every street and in every neighborhood of the metropolitan area, we sing their song and tell their remarkable stories. Right here at 93.5 WVIP, a Whitney Media station.
This is John Fix III from Cornell's True Value Hardware. For years, you've heard me talk about our family-owned hardware store in Eastchester and how we love helping our neighbors with all their home improvement needs. I've told you about our great service and selection and the wonderful associates who work at our store. And now I want to tell you about True Value Rewards, an exciting program that benefits you, our loyal customer. True Value Rewards is a free program that allows you to earn points and discounts on all your purchases. True Value Rewards members get 1 point for every dollar they spend at our store, and each time you accumulate 250 points, we'll mail you a certificate for $10. In addition, each month, selected products at Cornell's are specially priced exclusively for you, our True Value Rewards customer. And did I tell you that the program is free? Even better, when you sign up, you'll receive double points on your first purchase. For more information and to sign up, please stop by. The Cornell's Hardware Store is in Eastchester, between Scarsdale and Bronxville, on Route 22. Cornell's True Value Hardware, serving Westchester homeowners since 1909.
I'm a mother. It's my nature to protect my daughter. So when she told me she wanted to join the Guard, my gut reaction was to worry for her safety.
But I've always trusted my son and supported his decisions. So as hard as it was to imagine my son being a soldier, it was harder to imagine his future without the Guard.
The Guard will give her money for college,
real-world job skills.
And I'm proud of him.
Your son or daughter can serve your community in the National Guard. Call 1-800-GO-GUARD and ask about the job skills they'll gain.
Sponsored by the New York National Guard, aired by the New York State Broadcasters Association and this station.
The voice of Westchester, 1460 WVOX.
We are back. You are listening to Environmentally Sound on AM 1460 WVOX here in New Rochelle. And if you are listening on any of the other six continents other than Antarctica, any of the other five, this being the sixth other than Antarctica, where I presume there is no internet, but who knows, you have logged on to www.wvox.com and you are listening live. I don't know if there are any manned satellites up there right now, and if so, they can also be listening on their internet if they have nothing better to do in space. I'd like to just take a minute to talk about my good friends at the Learning Shop in Harrison, New York. Learning Shop is a full-service tutoring company which provides homebound services for upwards of 20 Westchester County school districts, including Bronxville, Rye, Edgemont, Chappaqua, and here in New Rochelle. In addition, they provide private tutoring in all academic areas and for any number of standardized tests, including the GEDs and SATs. And if there's a new test that you need to study for, you get in touch with the Learning Shop and they will study it up with you, even if they never heard of it before. These are educators and nothing stops them from educating. You can reach them in Harrison at 914-835-1070. They also have an after-school resource room program. They've been doing that for over 7 years and numerous successes with college-bound students and remedial instruction. Again, let me just give you the number one more time, 914-835-1070. That's the Learning Shop of Harrison, New York. Tell them Bob sent you, or don't tell them Bob sent you. You'll get the same excellent service no matter who sends you. Okay, we are speaking with Wiley Miller, cartoonist par excellence, who draws the non-sequitur strip, and once drew a strip called Fenton. What was that about, Wiley?
That was my first... syndicated comic strip. That was back in the very early 80s. And Fenton was a senior citizen. He was actually patterned more after my grandmother at the time. Had many of her qualities. And because at that time, this was an area that I felt hadn't been explored, that of senior citizens in the comics.
So why didn't you make Fenton a woman if it was patterned on your grandmother?
Because I'm not a woman. So I can't have a protagonist from a point of view that I can't possibly know.
But you also...
I can only imitate, just as I wouldn't do a comic strip with the central character as being black or any other ethnic group other than mine, because it doesn't come from an honest and real perspective, and that would become readily obvious in the writing.
But you're also not a senior citizen. You don't know about...
No, but that's why the strip isn't around anymore. but I figured that I would learn more as I got older. but it is, from talking and observing that. But it, just the... of him being a senior citizen, it wasn't about being a senior citizen. That just happened to be who and what he was. And it was his... the reason I wanted to have him as an older character is that I wanted to be able to use history as a platform, that he had this experience. We're looking back now, again, at the 80s. So we're talking about the Reagan era. And so much of what had happened, what was happening then, had happened before. So I was coming from a perspective of somebody who grew up in the Depression era, as my grandmother did, and how economic downturns and all that were nothing new to people of that age.
Uh-huh. Okay, I get it. It just seems that it could be humorous, perhaps, to have, not that an enlarged prostate is funny or erectile dysfunction
kind of
is funny.
again, for that reason, that I hadn't experienced that, that wasn't from my perspective. So it was a lot of it was in the interaction between Fenton and he worked in City Hall. Mm-hmm. As an assistant to the mayor, so I got political material that way, or mild political material, and the interaction between him and his grandson, and his dog.
Yeah. Well, you've been a dog guy all your life, right?
Yeah.
Now, tell me something, Wiley. I imagine that there are thousands of people listening right now who have art ability and who say, and they look at your strip, they say, yeah, I can draw comparably. It's not fine art, it's pop art. How do you crack such a tough market? How did you get into it, and why have you been so successful?
Well, the first thing one would have to do is to understand what the art form is. Cartooning is not drawing, it's writing. And unless you, it just, the best way I can describe it is that it's akin to a column. A cartoon, whether it's an editorial cartoon or a comic strip or magazine gag cartoon, it is essentially filling the same function as a column does. We just work in a different format. So it's observation. It's presenting your view of the world, the silly, quirky things you see, and you present it in your unique perspective in the comic form.
Okay, so the answer is go out and get yourself a life, gain some philosophy, as well as your drawing talent. And don't rely on the characters that you draw. Rely on the philosophy that you bring to it.
This is a unique art form that I've always believed that you're pretty much born to do, or you have a proclivity towards it, very much the same as a musician. You can hand somebody a trombone and teach them how it works, how to use it, but that's not going to make them a musician.
Well, you've done a couple of things which actually made my eyes pop open. One time you did a strip. This is not too recent. The page is yellow, so I presume it wasn't this last August. Who knows? But this is when Dan A goes to a parallel universe.
Uh-huh.
And everyone gets a wish, and one man, who's a strict constitution originalist, wished to have all the amendments removed.
Yep.
And then you have a voice off the panel saying, "Clarence, be a good slave and fetch me some coffee." And Dan A say, "Who's the guy that owns him?" And her double says, "Antonin Scalia. He made the same wish." So that's pretty controversial. You have two Supreme Court justices, one black, one white, and what you're saying is they're both conservative, and both of their views, if they both are as strict interpretationalists as they try to make us believe, then Clarence Thomas would still be a slave, and Antonin Scalia would be a very happy owner.
That's right. That's irony at work.
I found
it stunningly ironic that Clarence Thomas would at least proclaim to be such a strict constitutionalist, and all he ever does is parrot
Scalia.
Whatever Scalia wants. He just kind of goes along with it.
Right.
So it's just really a weak jurist, and yet another reason why he should have never been put on the Supreme Court. But I digress.
No, that's perfectly pertinent.
It's ironic that how he proclaims to be such a strict constitutionalist, the originalist of the Constitution, and under the original Constitution, slavery was legal.
That's right.
And that he would still be a slave. So while he decries liberalism, well, it's liberalism that got him where he is.
Exactly.
He wouldn't be able to read or write if it wasn't for liberalism.
And then, of course, there were the social programs.
Little things like Civil Rights Act. Go on and on. This is the stunning, again, irony of those who proclaim themselves.
Affirmative action is the one I'm looking for.
Conservatives, especially the neocon types.
Yeah.
And when they invoke their conservatism and saying the Constitution and all that at the same time. Well, the Constitution is a living document made to evolve with changing times. And is conservatives, by the very definition of the word, resist change and everything. So
right.
Every advancement in society that we've had in this country, including the very foundation of this country, the Revolutionary War, it was conservatives who stood in the way of that, or trying to stop all that. If conservatives had their way with every movement, as I said, first of all, we'd still be part of the British Empire.
Right. You might as well go that far.
Conservatives did not want to break from England. Women wouldn't be allowed to vote. Blacks would still be slaves. You can go on and on.
Let's you have this. It's another one that popped my eyes open, where Danae is having a dispute with Jenny, another young girl, and they have this boy. What's his name? Martin.
Jeffrey.
On a leash. She has him. Jenny has him on a leash, and Dene says, "Let him go." And she says, "Hey, you didn't want him, so I took him. He's mine now." Dene says, "No, he isn't." And they're going back and forth. And Jeffrey says, "Hold it. What am I? Just an object, something for your amusement to fight over so you can parade me around school like some kind of prize?" And the girls look at each other. They think about it. They say, "Yes." He says, "Cool, carry on."
Yeah.
that's pretty risque, isn't it?
The nature of boys. But the Jeffrey character actually came from a few years ago. some kid named Jeffrey wrote to me, obviously a young boy.
He sent you $100,000.
That he was absolutely in love with Danae. He's madly in love with Danae. So I thought, well, that's cool. You know, I'll give Danae this character, of a boy who has a big crush on her and who she ignores all the time, and I'll name him Jeffrey.
So did Jeffrey give you $100,000 in small bills?
No, I never heard back from him. I just thought it was funny.
So he got it for $100,000. He got it for free.
Yeah.
Damn it. I'm gonna have to play this a little bit more. I really want to see myself in your strip one day. Okay. You also relate to the ethics of things. Danae has a think tank, and I think this really reflects the way things are. They want to. She's working with Jeffrey on this. I gather Jeffrey is the brains, and she is the deviousness.
Right.
And she also has her trademark skull emblazoned on her computer, which I like as well. Years of research producing hard facts isn't a rumor. How are we supposed to refute it, says Jeffrey. And Danae says, just take all that research, say the exact opposite in a press release, mix some geek speak in, and it makes it make it sound like science, and presto, the media gives it equal weight, which I think is absolutely true.
Well, that's what I did.
And then
just the way things really are.
Jeffrey says, when does ethics ever come into the picture? And Danae says, when the client's check doesn't clear. Now, that is really a profound statement on the way things really are, and you say it in four panels and just maybe, I don't know, 100 words?
Yeah.
That's quite a feat.
That's the essence of cartooning, and this is why, this is where... the use of characters come in and to couch something complicated and serious like this through the innocent eyes of children. And so when you can present it that way, then it's more easily understood by adults as opposed to trying to do it, talking heads on television where you just pretty much ignore them. But it's just more of a stealth way of getting a point across that is more easily understood.
I really like that strip. That's one of the really good ones.
But
so many are good. You're really a talented man. Here's a little series that I've been following also, and then I want to ask you some more questions about other cartoonists, about Gary Larson and Bill Watterson, about dead cartoonists. I know you have a feeling about that, and we have about 8 minutes. So let me just relate to the series you did where Danae is just standing around doing nothing, and everyone asks, what are you doing? She says, I'm being good. The horse asks her pet horse, her sister asks, and there's a bunch of series. And just standing around, the horse says, well, that's boring. So she says, well, duh, why do you think I'm in trouble all the time? And she's fighting it. Then she realizes that she looked at the calendar wrong, and she's being good for an extra week. She's trying to just be good for a week, just so that Santa will notice her most recent stuff.
Yeah.
And then she's laying in bed with a big skull cloud overhead, and the horse says, what's wrong, Danae? The horse, let me just explain it to those who are not familiar with non sequitur, which Wiley Miller, my guest, writes. And the horse says, what's wrong, Danae? And she says, I misread the stupid calendar. Now I've got to be good for another stinking week. And that's the essence of it. So
yeah, that was leading up to Christmas.
Leading up to Christmas, just right? I'm sorry, I didn't prepare that. She was trying to be good
off his bad list.
For Santa. She's bad all year, and she wants to do that. And I presume that's also real.
People do this sort of thing all the time in real life, mm-hmm. And I do. Present that again in the more childlike terms, more easily understood.
Okay, Wiley, we have a caller. Let's take that call and see what's on his mind. Good morning, caller.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi.
I wanted to react a little bit to the representation of conservatism as being somewhat stuck in the ice ages. I think the argument that conservatism, by its very nature, once the status quo is a fatally flawed argument. I think that if you really look at history, you would find that that is not the case. Some would even argue that it was the racism that was invented by the liberals, if I could use that word, when the philosophy of the Enlightenment made it morally reprehensible and politically unfeasible to hold slaves anymore, that someone changed the status quo by saying, how can we continue this millennium-old practice of slavery now that it is not philosophically founded anymore to do so? And the more liberal-minded people of the time came up with racism.
Well, listen, Vince, I heard you say,
do for themselves, cannot handle themselves.
Vince, hang on a second.
That is why racism is a product of the liberal mind.
Vince.
But I must just say that when you really look at conservatism at its core, I might ask yourself and your guests, are there any core principles that they would say should not be changed and thereby become conservatives themselves?
Okay, let me just say something, Vince. I heard you on Mayor Davis's show, and you ran the same thing, which...
Yes, well, it's amazing how it dovetails.
Well, it's valid if it's true. I don't know. And certainly, I think Wiley was painting with a broad brush when he said that conservatives are all backward. Not so. I'm sure that there are points of view, and there are liberals who I totally disagree with, or I prefer the term progressive.
We do have to watch out. The liberal mindset that says change is good. I once applied to become a social worker many years ago. I'm glad I never went to Stony Brook out in Long Island. And sitting in the room with the professor and the many students, they kept talking about agents for change, agents for change.
What?
I raised my hand and I said, you know, two people come to mind as very, very strong agents for change, Jesus Christ and Mao Zedong. What kind of agent for change are you talking about? Because it seems that you folks are only talking about change in itself is good.
If not
related to core principles, which are really what the conservative mind is about, change is dangerous and a very ephemeral concept.
Okay, Vince, I understand that. And change is very... We're always. Thanks a lot for the call. Vince. Change is we're all going to. It's perennial. We are going to change. Conservatives want to keep it a certain way. They like their values, and there's nothing wrong with their values. It's when people lose their decency that we get critical. And these days, in my opinion, the conservative movement has just, they're not being honest anymore. Certainly, if they're epitomized by the likes of Rush Limbaugh, who speaks out of, he speaks out of, I'll say, his nose, for lack of, not to be rude and say where he really speaks out of. He just makes things up, and any liberal or progressive who does that, I also think deserves censure. What do you think, Wiley?
Yeah, there is a need for both liberal and conservative. When you have one or the other is when you have problems. When you just have one shoving down beliefs or ideology down the throats of others. You need the liberal mindset to evoke change for things that need changing, and you need conservatives to make sure that the change is needed to slow it down, say, okay, let's take a look at
right,
this.
I agree with that.
And,
yeah.
You know, how do we do this?
Right.
It's not an either-or, it's both.
Yes.
The definition of conservative is favoring traditional views and values, tending to oppose change. That is the very definition of conservative. This is because conservatives tend to be part of the status quo. Obviously, they don't want change because they are benefiting from the status quo. The definition of liberal is not limited to or established traditional, orthodox, or authoritarian attitudes, views, or dogmas. Free from bigotry, favoring proposals for reform, open to new ideas for progress, and tolerant of the ideas and behavior of others, broad-minded. What's wrong with that? Well, I could never understand is how this word got so demonized. When you read the definition of liberal, explain to me, why is this bad?
I couldn't agree more. I think of it kind of like a horse being... pulling a carriage. You don't let the horse run flat out because you wouldn't get there safely, and you don't hold him back to where he crawls and he doesn't make the speed. You try
Precisely.
To balance them. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All things in moderation. And this is a problem with both ends of the political extreme, mm-hmm. is that they want everything one way, their way. Well, we're not all the same, and that requires listening to each other.
Good. Now, Wiley, we're running out of time, unfortunately. I know you have some issues about dead cartoonists, and some of these, and it's valid. Some of the strips that keep running long after the originator is gone, and they just become factories almost. We have about a minute and a half. Would you just tell us what you think about that?
A problem in the comic industry, which wasn't a problem 30, 40 years ago when we had a strong vital newspaper industry where you had, you know, lots of competing newspapers and lots of space for comics. And when a cartoonist died or retired, that the, you know, syndicate would hire people to take it over because it's simply a cash cow for the syndicate. It's all commerce. And to keep, you know, that strip going as long as they could to keep that cash coming in. That's all well and good. And that served as a good training ground for young cartoonists breaking to take over an old strip and to learn the craft firsthand. Well, those days are long gone. We have a dying newspaper industry. There's very limited space. And you have a shrinking comic section, literally and figuratively. And it's almost impossible for new talent to break in. And as an industry, we should be doing everything we can to help young, developing talent break in.
Okay.
And when you have dead cartoonists, they take up space that should be left open.
Thanks a lot, Wiley. We gotta run, but I very much appreciated speaking to you. Thank
okay.
you so much.
All right.
I would like to thank Wiley Miller for taking the time to chat with us this morning. Comic strips are a truly American art, and they express us in a profound way. Sure, we're literary, we read real books, but the cartoonist can reach us and make us think in just the few seconds it takes to read his or her strip. Our thought for the week: we are generally the better persuaded by reasons we discover ourselves than by those given to us by others. Thank you for listening. Remember to be kind. You are here.
This is the flagship station of Whitney Media, live from New York's Golden Apple, 1460 WVOX New Rochelle, and worldwide at WVOX.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Dave Anthony.
Many of the same people who once accused me of refusing to acknowledge setbacks in Iraq now are the ones who are refusing.